It's Friday, July the 28th, 2006. This is Tips from the Top Floor Show number 143.
Here's another edition of Tips from the Top Floor, bringing you the best tips and tricks for your digital photography.
And today we'll find out about the first digital camera ever, and we'll have a very interesting interview guest on the show again.
And here's your host, Chris Marquardt.
Hello and welcome. This is Chris Marquardt, podcasting from the Top Floor Productions headquarters in Tübingen, southern Germany. And this is Tips from the Top Floor, the podcast about all things digital photography. And first and foremost, here's a shout out to Dorothy Yamamoto, who was among the first Tips from the Top Floor listeners and who's in hospital right now. Dorothy, get better. A lot of people are thinking of you. If you are new to the show, you might wonder what this is about. Now, Tips from the Top Floor comes to you, well, at the moment, a bit less than three times a week, usually three times a week. And yeah, it's about photography, digital photography in specific, and we have tips and tricks, we have sound seeing tours where you can come along as I take pictures, we have interviews, today we'll have a great interview, and lots of other things. There's a Photoshop corner. If you're just listening to this, if you subscribe through iTunes or some other directory, do yourself a favor, go to the website tipsfromthetopfloor.com. There's so much more information there. The podcast awards voting is up as of today, and I need your help again. It's voting time, and as you know, Tips from the Top Floor has been nominated in two categories. First, in the People's Choice category, which I'm really proud of to be nominated there, and the second is I'm also proud of that, is the Education category. Now, I don't know the rules yet. As I record this, the voting is not officially open, but when you listen, it will be open. I suppose that you can vote daily, and I think that's what we need. We made the podcast award last year for the education category, the 2005, and let's see if we can do that again. So if the voting is daily, just go there, vote every day, and help Tips from the Top Floor win the award. If the rules say, and I don't know them yet, if the rules say that voting can only be done for one of the categories, please go for the education category. But if you can vote for two categories, it would be both People's Choice and Education. And then, of course, please don't forget to vote for all your other favorite podcasts as well. There's a lot of work that goes into podcasts, and every podcaster deserves this sort of a recognition. There's only six more shows left until the magic 150. And if you want to be on show 150, send me an MP3 to info@tipsfromthetopfloor.com. Anything funny or photography tip or whatever you can think of. If you have a podcast, yeah, send me a plug. Send me a greeting. Plug your show. I'd really love to have a lot of listener-generated material on that show. This is a show for the listeners, and the more listener participation, the better. Which, by the way, also shows in the forum. Or you can leave a voicemail on one of our two voicemail numbers. The one in the US is at 206-202-DSLR. That's 206-202-3757. And in the United Kingdom, it's +44-7005-805-PIC. Not pig, pick. That's +44-7005-805-742. And that one is in the UK. And yes, you can leave greetings for show number 150 there as well. Oh, and speaking of numbers getting smaller, I had a few signups for the workshop, and there are now just three more slots open. So there's still a chance for you if you want to be part of the fun. Lots of great people have signed up, and I'm really, really, really looking forward to it. Now, on today's show, we'll have an interview with David Hobby. David Hobby is The Strobist. And that's not from some weird movies. He has some excellent tips on a very affordable mobile off-camera lighting setup and a lot of other things. And we'll get to that in a minute, so stay tuned for that. Oh, quick word about the show frequency. It's kind of not very regular right now. I know, and I get you used to the Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule, and just doesn't really work for me right now. I have three projects going on simultaneously here in my company. It's I'm doing pictures for one customer, doing sound work on a business English CD for kind of a big German publishing house, and a website project, and doing the bookkeeping for Top Floor Productions and so on. It's mental, and then I kind of need the weekend for myself. So it's a bit difficult, but I'll try to have as many shows as out as possible. But if it's over the next 1 or 2 months just going to be 1 or 2 shows a week, I apologize for that. All right, now let's see what we have on today's show. Oh yeah, he is the useless fact of the day. The first digital camera. Steve Sasson, the inventor of the first digital camera, worked as an electrical engineer with Kodak. In 1975, his boss asked him to try to build a camera with the newly available first CCD sensor as a proof of concept. After a lot of work with oscilloscopes and soldering irons, he was ready for the first test shot and talked a lab assistant into being the first digital model. The black and white image took 23 seconds to be stored, and after another 23 seconds loading time, the image was displayed on a TV screen. And in an interview, Sasson said that a silhouette of her hair could be seen, but her face was a blur of static. And the model was less than happy with the photograph and left, saying, "You need work." But after Sasson reversed a set of wires, the image was much better. Concept proven. So how does this camera compare to today's models? Well, if design is an issue, this camera is not for you. The size is that of a big toaster, and that's the American ones, not the small European models. And on top of an open rack made out of aluminium profiles and filled with circuit boards sits a blue box with the lens. And on top of that is another blue box with the viewfinder. The access to the storage media is very easy though. An open cassette recorder is fitted to the side of the camera, and that's where the data is stored. Remember, this is in 1975. No flash cards or hard disks inside for quite a while. And with a resolution of 0.01 megapixels, and yes, that's 100 by 100 pixels, only black and white, and a rate of 2 frames per minute in continuous mode, it can't really compete with today's models, but never since has any digital camera reached the weight of this one. 8.5 pounds, or nearly 4 kilograms. And now here's the interview with David Hobby, photojournalist on the staff of the Baltimore Sun in Maryland. Let's hear what he has to say about off-camera lighting in the field. Hi, David.
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Okay, so, David, you run a website called The Strobist, right?
Strobist.com. Yep. Yes, I do. I started it a few months ago, just thinking it would be a... just a little way for me to exercise my creativity and write some things down that have been in my head for 20 years or so, and it's kind of gone a little crazy. So now it's grown into this thing that is eating up all my time.
That's the same with the podcast here. Yeah. When I tried to get an idea what the site was about, I think what really made it for me was the subtitle on the headline you have, and it says, "Because on-camera flash is for weenies."
Well, that changes on a daily basis.
Or does
not
it?
Daily basis. Periodically, according to my mood and who I think might be looking at the site that day. So, you know, if you're Bill Gates and I knew you were coming to see the site, I might say how wonderful Microsoft is or something. I don't know. No, it's sort of like my little billboard that I change to suit my mood. My moods are frequently weird, so there you go.
Okay, and it also reflects in your writing style. I quite like that a lot. So, yeah, this then I assume is about off-camera flash, right?
Yes. And everyone seems to have a flash with their camera, and if they can just separate the camera and the flash, you know, you can do so much better stuff. So that's the biggest thing that I stress, and my entire site is about how to do that without having to buy a bunch of new equipment or spend a lot of money, and just getting very elegant pictures using the ideas that very high-end photographers use without having to buy their expensive equipment.
Okay, and that's actually one of the reasons why I thought it might be a good idea to invite you on the show. If you've ever listened to Tips on the Top Floor, you know that I don't really like buying expensive tripods, but I'm kind of a fan of homemade beanbags.
Oh, yeah. So, and when you're done with the assignment, you can eat them if you have to, I suppose.
Right. Okay, so I've browsed around your site, and there's so much information. It's hard to really get it all in a short time. You really have to spend some time there, but it's amazing. One of the things I think that's pretty central to the site is the Lighting 101, where I guess you kind of tell the viewer everything about affordable mobile lighting. Is that right?
Well, I know I want to talk about a lot of things on the website, and I didn't know where my readers would be in terms of how much education and experience they already had. So in a moment of insanity, I decided to put kind of a whole course just from the very beginning, including what kind of flash you should look for, and it isn't maybe one necessarily made by your camera manufacturer, as you know if you've been there. So I wanted to start people from the beginning, bring them through a good basic course so we could spend the majority of the site just playing with all the things that you can do and not have to worry that we had to educate people every time they showed up to the site for the first time.
Right, and the Lighting 101, kind of the way it's structured in a more of a linear fashion, really works for me. I find that pretty good.
Well, you know, it's tough enough for me to think about one thing at a time, so I try to stick to that and to progress through. You know, the fact is, if you want to light off camera, you're probably going to have to buy a little bit of equipment, but you certainly can do. You can do the whole thing for less than $160, which would be what I guess 140 or so euros, depending on where you can find the stuff. It might be a little more over there because things tend to be a little more expensive in Europe, but you shouldn't have to spend a lot of money to get great light, and that's just the basic tenet, and I try to drive that home every time I can.
$160 for a decent off-camera mobile lighting setup.
Yes, and that includes the light. There's some fun involved. You have to scrounge a little bit, and maybe you'll have to make one or two things. But yes, you absolutely can get an off-camera lighting setup for $160. And there's a post detailing exactly how to do that. That brings everything together. That's on the site. I'll be happy to send a link over to the Top Floor if you like.
I will definitely link that from the website. Absolutely.
This is
I think just the right thing that my listeners need. So can you give us a quick 1 minute rundown of how to get that kind of a setup? What are the key things in there?
Well, you know, and the interesting thing is you could actually do it for less, but I'm about portability and certainly value and finding something that will last a long time. So the setup includes a light stand made by Bogen. It's also manufactured under the name Manfrotto, I think, over in Italy. But the model is a 3373, a Bogen 3373 light stand. And I love that stand because it has solid aluminum legs instead of tubular, which is nice because I can drill holes through those legs and put a strap into it. That's what the whole kit is going to ride on. And this stand will go up about 7 feet, but it will collapse down to about 14 inches. So when you put a strap on that, you've got something you can easily throw over your shoulder.
That's helpful.
That's the first part. The second part would be the light that you're going to stick on top of the stand. And this is where I go a little off the beaten path. And I suggest that people look for a used Nikon speed light, SB24, SB25, SB26. And the reason I suggest them is because they're very well built. They're as much as 20 years old. They're still working very well. They have full manual control, and they come with a PC synchronization terminal on the outside of the flash, which is a wonderful thing. because now you can trigger it with your Canon or your Nikon or whatever. You can find these for about $50 in the United States. Again, you may have to look a little bit, but they're all over the place on eBay.
Wow, so that's really reasonable in terms of pricing, yeah.
It is. You can't buy a Vivitar 283 new for that even.
Wow. So the stand, the flashes or the strobes, what else is important there?
Right. Well, you have to connect the two together, and I recommend there's a large camera retailer called Adorama.com, which is sort of like the Amazon.com of photo retailers, and they make their own private brand of light stand to flash adapter, which takes it has a socket to take an umbrella, and it also comes with a hot shoe, or not a hot shoe, a cold shoe, because it doesn't sink, that shoe adapter. So basically that's going to allow you to mount the flash onto the top of the light stand, swivel it any direction you need or tilt it, and take an umbrella, which is the next item in the list.
Okay, so umbrellas tend to be quite large.
Well, not the one that I picked out and used. There's a Westcott double fold umbrella, and again, the links are all on the site for these things. It's a $20 umbrella that opens up to 43 inches. You can get it in white or silver, but it collapses down to 13 or 14 inches. It's a wonderful thing. It works just like the umbrellas that you get that double fold, and when you're walking out into the rain, but you want to keep the umbrella in your briefcase. But it's
right.
A photographic umbrella.
So. That's the things you buy. So what about the things that you said are a bit of more on the DIY side?
Well, there's one other thing that you need to get, and that's some kind of mechanism by which to synchronize the off-camera flash to your camera. If you want to spend a lot of money, you can get something called Pocket Wizards, and I love them, but it's not something a college student, for instance, starting out might be able to afford, because they're about $300 for the set. But what I suggest instead is to make your own sync cord, and by that I mean to buy a couple of small, short, inexpensive PC to household cords, and they're about $10 a piece. And then on the inside, but in the main length of cord, you're going to use this lamp cord and put connectors on the other end. And I've got a detailed instruction of how to do this on the website. But you can make a sync cord that may be as much as 50 feet long for $20 or $30 maybe.
Which is
fairly
cheap.
Very durable.
Very stable, very durable? Cool.
Very much so. And if you need to make it longer, you're buying your cord at the home improvement store for 20 cents a foot, as opposed to going to a photo store and spending $50 for a 5-foot long PC cord. It's modular, and if you ever have problems with the cord, it's very easy to replace that, or trim a little length of cord off or whatever gave you a problem. And I have one of these I use as a backup to my radio slaves, and I've had the same cord for, I guess, 15 years now.
Yeah, I did have some surprises here in the studio with bought sync cords, so it's definitely something I'll have to look into.
Well, the trick with sync cords is not to jiggle them around a lot, and this brings me to two other pieces of gear that I absolutely love, or one piece, and you need a couple or three or four or five or six or ten of them, but it's okay because they're only about 25 cents each, and that's something called a ball bungee. If you think of a bungee cord, the stretch cords with the hooks on the end, think of a closed loop with a rubber ball that's sewn into one end, so you just wrap it around and it hooks to itself.
Okay.
You have no hooks to damage your equipment, and this is a wonderful piece of gear. And in fact, I use two ball bungees to secure the umbrella to the light stand, so everything will go over my shoulder nice and easily when I'm traveling. But a ball bungee can also, in a pinch, it can strap a flash to any kind of a stick or a pole or anything like that, or electrical conduit. With regard to the PC cord, the ball bungee works in such a way where you go ahead and strap your PC cord to the flash, and then you strap your PC cord to the camera, so your PC connections, which are by far the most vulnerable part of the cord, aren't moving as you're moving. They're staying still and firm and held to the camera, and the cheap, heavy-duty electrical cord is taking all of the stress, and that's what makes the cord last for so long.
I see. Yeah, and that's the areas where I usually get the problems with my own sync cords, yeah.
It's a lot of torque and pressure put on a very small connector, so I take the pressure off of that connector and put the pressure on to the cheap lamp cord because it can take it.
Okay, so is that the whole setup you're talking about on your Lighting 101?
Well, there's one more thing, and it's one of the more exotic pieces of gear, and that's a, it's a cereal box snoot, which is nothing more than a rectangular tube made out of cardboard, and I use cereal boxes. I don't know what kind of cereal you have over in Germany, but I happen to still like Frosted Flakes back from when I was a kid.
We do have those, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, well, there you go. So now you know how high my health food eating habits are up on the chain. But what you're going to do is you're going to make a square tube out of that just with tape and cover it with some kind of non-reflective tape on the inside. It's going to be light tight, and you'll slide that over your flash, and it will convert it from a flash that at its very tightest may be able to equal, say, an 85 or 105 millimeter lens. But now you can make this tiny little beam of light that you can do anything you want with. So with that one little kit for less than $200, I had the ability to have straight camera, you know, off-camera flash or with an umbrella or with a snoot. So I can make that little cool beam of light that you see and you try to take advantage of anytime it occurs naturally. I can make that anytime I want. And to carry that around, I would just slide my umbrella into that sleeve of cardboard before I bungee it to the light stand, and it's all a very short, you know, very very light and compact package.
Wow. So how much does that whole package weigh when you carry that around?
You know, it certainly doesn't weigh as much as a camera. I really don't even notice I have it on my shoulder. I normally travel with a waist pack, two cameras, you know, one with a wide zoom and one with a telephoto zoom.
Right.
My small waist pack would have maybe a macro lens, a couple of pocket wizards, and my flash, and then I throw that other thing over my shoulder, and you know, I can easily walk 5 miles with that setup if I need to do that.
I like that. I really like that. Another thing that I found on your website that I found really interesting, I did an episode on eBay photography a while ago where I told people to use sheets of paper as reflectors and a desk lamp and stuff like that, just household stuff too. Come up with a small kind of on-the-desk studio for small object photography. Now, what you've done has really blown me away because I think that's quite a bit more versatile. Can you tell us a bit about the macro photo studio you came up with for your son?
Oh, yeah. Well, he likes to take pictures of his little creations. So you know, backing up a little bit, I think it's important to have an understanding of how light affects 3D objects and how light falls over them and different styles of lighting, you know, will bring out the texture in different items. And especially maybe if you're shooting something reflective, you need to be able to wrap it in light, you know, and hide your reflection in the picture and such. But I wanted to make something that was very versatile and very cheap. You know, very cheap is always a big thing with me because, you know, it's not that I skimp on everything that I do, but I like the idea that if I have a specific lighting problem, I can solve it for a few dollars and make something that is exactly suited to my task rather than spending $300 or $400 and getting something that might sort of be suited to the task. But this macro studio in a box is nothing but a box that's maybe half a meter cubed with windows cut out of the box and you replace those windows with sheets of tissue paper and you shoot into the top of the box. Think the box laying on its side with you're shooting into the top of the box that's rotated 90 degrees, and you've got windows everywhere with the tissue paper taped onto it, and a sheet of poster board sweeping under your subject and right up the back, so you have a nice infinity background sweep. And now, if you have a flash or a light or even sunlight on the outside of those tissue panels, you're going to get light that really looks gorgeous. And you can control it totally by whether or not you choose to slide a piece of black cardboard, say, into one side, or whether you put two lights, a light on each side, or maybe a light from above. It gives you all of the control you would have in a studio with thousands of dollars worth of equipment, but on a much smaller scale physically and certainly a much smaller scale financially. If you didn't have any of this stuff with you, you can build it for $10, but I think most people might have almost everything they need in the house if they just look hard enough. You know, if you look in the little gift wrap box and you see the folded white tissue, you know, you just steal a little bit of that and go to the closet where you keep your flattened boxes and a little bit of tape and some scissors and you're there. You might have to buy the poster board, but that might be it.
So that'll get as low as $1 or $2 then.
Well, and the beauty is you can choose many, many, many colors of poster board. So if you're doing a product shot, you may want to shoot it on a red background or you may want to shoot it on a blue background. And, you know, you're talking 49 cents a sweep instead of going to the photo store and spending, you know, $30 for your roll of Savage background paper.
Okay, so that's definitely one of the things that my listeners are going to love. David, I think we're almost 20 minutes into this interview already. Any good lighting tips for my listeners that we can wrap this interview up with?
Well, you know, first of all, I think the most important thing with lighting is the space between the light and the camera. Get the light off the camera. Light coming from the axis that you're taking the picture is boring and it reveals no texture. So if assuming you're getting the light off the camera, if I had anything to suggest to anyone, I would suggest that they go back and look at the idea of lighting with hard light as opposed to diffused light, which is something that we've just gotten so into for the last 10 or 15 years with soft boxes and umbrellas. You know, with digital cameras, we all have the equivalent of an old Polaroid back on our camera every time we push the button for free. And so if you can use that hard light in a way where the flash is working kind of close to the ambient light, and this is just something that there are lessons on my site on how to balance flash and ambient, you can get wonderful, wonderful looking light while still having the detail because the lighting ratios between your hard flash and your existing light are fairly close. So you can use your light to really define and sculpt things, not unlike the cinematographers did back in the 1930s and 1940s with such beautiful hard light sources.
David, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Just let's mention your website again. It's strobist.com. That's strobist.com. And I will link that on the show notes. And thanks for being on the show.
It's my pleasure, Chris. I'm glad we're finally able to catch up with both of our wildly different schedules.
That's right. Okay, thanks a lot, David.
Likewise.
And that was it for today's Tips from the Top Floor. My name's Chris Marquardt, and this podcast has been brought to you by Top Floor Productions. Show support. Yeah, this show wouldn't happen without support by the Pixies. And show support today was provided by Rebecca Davis and Rolf Steinort. He's, kind of turning into our official science department. Great job, thank you. And don't forget, the podcast awards are up for voting. Vote often, vote as often as you are allowed by the rules, and help us get the award again. And for the 150 show, I'm still looking for MP3s and greetings, and you can leave voicemails on the two voicemail lines, one in the United States, based in Seattle, 206-202-DSLR, that's 206-202-3757, and in the UK, call +44 7005 805 PIC, that's +44 7005 805 742. Well, that was it for today. Thanks for tuning in, thanks for downloading the show, and thank you all who subscribe to the show. Subscription is still the best way to regularly get the show automatically delivered, and it's for free. Okay, talk to you again next week. Enjoy the weekend, and happy shooting.